independent wrestling is pretty damn fucking cool.
We're sitting down in the spotlight and squared circle with Rhino.
We're trying to bring more awareness to the independent professional wrestling scene.
Undoubtedly thankful for anybody that just decided to tune in and actually liked us enough to keep listening.
You're tuned into a show of such thermonuclear awesomeness, your head might just implode into another quantum universe. That's right, it's Grapple Talk, the universal cure for boredom. Featuring Nicholas Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden. Stick around, you don't know what is going to be coming out of their mouth.
Welcome into Grapple Talk, ladies and gents. My name is Nick Ragnar, joined by A.C. Riley, Jesse Von Ruden.
Hey,
same
going?
Intro every single week.
Close.
For, what are we at? What episode is it?
93.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, we're at 93, man.
I thought we were in the 80s.
No, we're in the 90s now.
Wow.
It's 93.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Think about that for a sec. Seven weeks away from 100.
Yeah, ain't that something?
That's crazy.
They said it wouldn't last. But look at us.
Look at us.
We're lasting. We're lasting forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
What gimmick is that?
I don't know. we could do the whole Terry Funk. Forever.
Or we
forever.
Can do the Sandlot gimmick is like forever.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting now. We thought about actually doing this at Arby's since that actually opened up in Alaska.
Yeah,
but we decided
right.
not to because no one likes loose meat.
Nobody does like loose meat, and Arby's, it's good. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's not bad, but I could also go home and just, you know, make a roast beef sandwich.
You know, I had a friend who's like, she was so excited about Arby's. I'm like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you? She's like, bathing in Arby's sauce, and it was the most disgusting thing I've ever heard in my life.
I don't understand, though. Is bathing in Arby's sauce a good measurement of excited, or is that like, I hate Arby's sauce? So I'm excited about Arby's so much I want to dip myself
what
in this.
What the hell are you talking about? People they take baths in money because they like money. They take baths in jello because it's fun. Like, nobody ever takes baths in something because they don't like it.
I don't
Would you take a bath?
Maybe it was like, oh, it's acidic and I want to burn myself alive in sauce because I hate Arby's. I don't know.
You're hurting yourself.
Maybe they just weren't excited about Arby's.
All right, that's enough of that.
Here are some featured shows appearing in the Midwest region.
All right, guys, we're going to kick things off with Brew City Wrestling this Friday night at the Knights of Columbus, 1800 South 92 Street in West Allis, Wisconsin. We'll be there as well, and it's going to be a good show. You're going to see the Brew City Wrestling heavyweight champion, Sadus, taking on former champion, Joey Avalon. Of course, another return match, as you're going to see the current Heritage champion, Paulie Tomaselli, taking on former champion, Tyler Sunday. Hey guys, it's men versus women as Alex Bernardino and Scott Marciano take on the women's champion Sierra and the former champion Stacy Shadows. That one's definitely going to be one you do not want to miss. Show starts at 7:30. Tickets are $17 at the door or $14 at BruceCityWrestling1.com. That's BruceCityWrestling.com.
Another show happening this weekend, this Saturday in Taylor, Michigan is Clash Pro Wrestling. It's at the Taylor Town Trade Center, 22525 Ecorse Road, Ecorse Road, if you're trying to type it in a MapQuest and you didn't have an idea.
Nobody uses MapQuest anymore, except for Jesse Von Ruden.
Hey, man, I use the Google Maps.
Google Maps.
If you're typing it in, 22525 Ecorse Road.
No, you use an atlas.
That's right.
Exactly.
He uses the position of the sun to decide. Oh.
Yep.
North.
I can only navigate at night based on the stars.
I really hope next time we see Steve Stardom, he like compiles all the times that you guys talked about him, and he just saves it.
He loves it.
That'd be funny.
He does.
He loves it.
You lost your train of thought.
I lost my train of thought because now I'm just, I don't know.
You're off the rails, man.
I'm off the rails. But definitely on the rails for this Saturday is Clash Wrestling Heavyweight Championship on the line as Dragon Greed takes on Matthew Priest. Also on the line is the tag team gold as the champions of the Midnight Society takes on the challengers of the Clash, which is a bit of a disadvantage for the Midnight Society because the Clash consists of four members, and of course they only need two, and they're doing Freebird style for who they actually announce will be in the match, so it really could be any combination of the four members of the Clash. 2015 Triple Crown Cup winner Elk will be taking on Brutus Dillon, and also in women's action, Ashley America takes on Dominique Fabiano. Show starts at 8 p.m. It's a little bit of a later show. Tickets are available at ClashWrestling.com. That's Clash Pro Wrestling.
Can you just stop?
No. Yes.
By the way, how do you guys like my facial hair?
It's kind of nice.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's weird. I haven't. Remember you guys? I always used to grow out the mustache and everything like that. And
I almost didn't recognize you.
How's it feel that you don't have to shave right now?
It's really nice. I mean, I have it because I've been filling in for the overnight producer, right? So I haven't had to shave because I'm not going to be on air at all. And it's honestly been really. It's awesome. I love it.
So you go back to being on air on Monday. So is it going to be kind of a heartbreaker on Sunday knowing you have to shave?
It actually really is. I think today.
Are you going to play like sad music?
I think I might.
Sad, like, heartbreak music, and you're like, all by myself.
I think tonight I'm going to shave the beard and just leave the stash, though, for the next couple of days, just to live it out as much as I can.
Hey, Gaze.
And Mustache Nick. Mustache Nick, Gaze. Funky Monkey Wrestling happening on Saturday at the Latin American Social Club, 2708 West 4th Street in Sterling, Illinois. Cool matches that you could expect to see. The Funky Monkey Championship's on the line. It's the champ, Bobby Houston. Goes one-on-one with the challenger, Judd the Janitor. That's great. Isn't it great to hear about a janitor that's actually making it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, his uncle was Duke the Dumpster Drozy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Christian Rose will be taking on Matt Cage. In women's action, you'll see Violet Parker against Brie Allison. And the Monkey in the Bank winner, Bucky Collins, is taking on Merrick Brave. Show starts at 6:05. A little bit of an early start, but that's okay because sometimes maybe you want to have the rest of your Saturday night to do something after the wrestling show. Funky Monkey Wrestling in Sterling, Illinois. Come and check it out. Obviously, that's not the only shows that will be happening this weekend.
Nope.
You can always hit up the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheGrappleTalk. Twitter, @TheGrappleTalk. Otherwise, you can always go to our website. It is TheGrappleTalkPodcast.weebly.com.
Just take out the Facebook.
It's terrible that I always screw up our website.
That's okay. I never go to it.
I don't either. I always forget we have one.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of cool stuff going on this week in the independent circuits around the area. Chicago's coming through. We're going to actually probably not be there. That's just the way it falls. It's a Thursday.
I'd like to be there. I got to work at 10 p.m., though.
Yeah, well, hang on. I got to work all day, too. Plus, we also have Hell in a Cell this weekend, guys.
And
we're going to go over the card pretty quick. Because we got a great interview with George Shire, and we want to get to that as soon as possible. But we have to talk about Hell in a Cell, because as we were coming into the studio, I asked you guys, hey, man, you guys excited about Hell in a Cell? And you're like, what weekend is that?
Yeah,
it is actually this weekend. So,
go over some of the bigger matches, I guess.
All right.
What do you want to talk about?
You guys want to start right out with the main event? You want to start with the...
Let's build up to the main event.
I want to actually discuss with you guys maybe more than just Hell in a Cell. Let's talk about the Divas title match. You got Charlotte taking on Nikki Bella. Let's talk about what you guys think the state of this whole Divas revolution is, how it's going. Do you guys still think that it's as big as it was when it first happened? I mean, do you think that there's still some sort of a revolution going on right now, or do you think things have simmered down a little bit?
I think it's a work in progress. I think everyone wanted the stars and moon right away, but it takes a little bit to really have a revolution click. And I think they're heading in the right direction. They got a lot of great gals on that roster who can actually go. You're getting multiple segments. You're getting a high-profile match like this at Hell in a Cell. It's going to be a good one, I think.
I think it's going to be really tough for WWE to replicate what they had in NXT, just because I think that NXT product of the women's division is just so good and still good right now that I think they're trying to carry that over to the main show. And while I think it's working, I just think it's going to take time, like you just kind of said, that it's a work in progress to try to make that, to replicate that to the point where it's as big as it is in the NXT division.
Because, well, I think the biggest thing about the NXT women's division versus the main roster women's division is the fact that the main roster, you're only seeing three diva stables go at each other at one point in time or not, whereas in NXT, you see different women wrestle different competitors. It's not just the same match over and over and over and over and over again. It's, you know, for example, it's Bayley versus Sasha, or Nia Jax versus some random jobber, or Nia Jax versus Dana Brooke, or, you know, it's like it's different stuff every week, opposed to, like, for example, Raw, where they had Team PCB versus Team Bad, or Team Bad versus Team Bella, stuff like that. It's the same matches every week.
Which I think we kind of talked about. It seems like in NXT, it's made it's kind of integrated into just a part of the show. Mm-hmm. Where in WWE, it's almost like they're trying to force it as in these nine women are going head to head in the Divas Revolution.
The best thing
for 10 minutes
might be liking it too is Subway making a big push for guacamole. Right, guac should just be a part of the sandwich as it is. Don't make a huge deal out of it because some people just don't like guac. I'm not saying guac is a bad thing.
I like guac.
It's a good thing, but if you have it already on the sandwich, it's definitely a different thing. Who you got in this match, Alex?
That's a good question.
I would really like – I would honestly – I thought – I don't think Nikki Bella's reign should have ended when it did. Mm-hmm. I understand, though. I mean, they're, you know, she just got the record or whatever, and they're probably like, ah, whatever, try to give somebody else a chance at it. But I think that – she was still doing what she had to do, and I think that they kind of pushed the title on Charlotte a little too soon. I'm going to say that, obviously, I think Charlotte's going to keep the belt. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to go in a different route here, and maybe – I don't want to say they're going to push the Bellas aside, but I think they're going to try to work their way towards involving more of the NXT women like Sasha and all that, you know, those gals. So I think that Charlotte will obviously walk out of the Hell in a Cell with the title.
Yeah, I think Charlotte's going to walk out with the belt as well, just because I think it would be – kind of stupid if Nikki wins the belt back at Hell in a Cell when she just lost it at the last pay-per-view to Charlotte. So you don't want to make Charlotte, especially when you've been building her up as much as you have, you don't want to have her lose the belt within a month span. And I think that would just make her into a paper champion and then not really legitimate. And then so I don't think Nikki Bella walks away with the belt.
Isn't that the weird thing, though? Like, when we talk about wrestling, I just want to say this really quick, and I want to actually get your opinion on Jesse.
Yeah, sure.
When you talk about wrestling and you're like, oh, well, she just won the belt, why should she lose it? But if you ever watch, like, UFC or any, you know, maybe even, you know, Super Bowl or something, or, you know, anything, obviously those titles are drawn out a lot more. But it's funny how in wrestling it's like, well, they need to hold the belt for an extended period of time if they just won it. Otherwise, they're a paper champion, like Riley said, which is true. Mm-hmm. But if you watch, like, UFC, you know, one guy could have a title this month and 6 months later he could instantly lose it, and that's just the way things go. I mean, don't you think that's kind of weird?
It's kind of weird, but at the same time, though, it's just how championships are perceived in wrestling as opposed to actual sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably it right there.
I just wanted to ask.
Like, a championship half the time is just a spotlight, you know?
Right.
So if you're putting the spotlight on a certain wrestler for a certain period of time, you hope they can actually carry that spotlight. If they can't, they're going to yank it right off. I'm just going to go with Charlotte for that one. You know, the rumor has it Nikki Bella and John Cena are getting married here pretty soon, so it would make no sense for Nikki Bella to win the belt and then just be like, sorry, honeymoon.
I'm married.
Yeah. You can look, but you can't touch at the Divas title because I took it.
Yikes.
All right.
Or is it going to be like when John Cena took time off and then the next day he was on Raw and he never really took time off?
Oh, he took time off. He took a day off. All right.
he took 8 hours off. Let's be honest.
The Intercontinental Championship is on the line
as
a new champion. Kevin Owens defends against former champion The Ryback.
I don't think it's the same thing. I don't think Kevin Owens can lose a belt here. I mean,
did you see that pop-up powerbomb on Mark Henry on Raw?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kevin Owens is killing it right now. I think he's the perfect mid-card guy, and I think he's the perfect guy to get that belt over, as Cena's doing with the U.S. belt. I mean, I don't see why he should lose it. I think it'll be a great matchup. Ryback, obviously, I think turning things up a gear after having a slow start in WWE. You know, looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's definitely a match that could really steal this show.
Yeah. What do you think, Riley?
I think Owens.
Okay.
I think there's no other reason to draw it out. I think it's just going to be Owens.
Cena's got the U.S. title challenge. Jesse, I want your prediction. I don't even want to let you talk. Who is going to come out and face Cena for the open challenge?
Man, that's a good question.
It's tough, isn't it?
And it is really tough. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it's Dean Ambrose.
Yeah, is he even doing anything?
He was supposed to be on the pre-show card, but they ended up pulling that match. So it could be any of those guys. It could be Dean Ambrose. It could be Luke Harper. It could be Braun Strowman or whatever his name is.
That's right, I guess, yeah.
So it's going to be a combination, maybe one of those three guys. Does Cena hold on to the belt? Yeah, we'll find out. You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, people want to know who's going to beat him. And whoever it is going to have to put in a hell of a showing, because even Ziggler, like, 2 weeks ago, had probably one of the better showings he's had in months.
Right.
And he still couldn't hold the belt.
Right.
Who do you think, Nick?
You almost called him Jesse.
I almost did.
You have no clue who we are. So if me and Nick right now switched hats.
Who are you?
I read a report that there might be a chance Tyler Breeze is making his way to the main roster. I think
he debuted actually on SmackDown this week.
That's funny. I don't watch SmackDown. That's why I didn't know that.
Well, guess what? It happens tomorrow since this is Wednesday. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
I didn't read the dirt sheets, I guess.
I got it from Future Boy Ryan Brown.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. All right. Well, Who you got beating Cena for the U.S. Open?
AC Riley.
I was going to say Tyler Breeze as well, just because he, yeah, he.
You're going to be there. It's going to be you.
It's going to be me.
It's going to be like, no. Oh, God. Who wants to come out of here? AC-130, watch out. He's going to walk out there and be like, this is my building.
Turns around. Attitude adjustment. 1, 2, 3, it's over.
That is definitely not happening. I say Tyler Breeze.
Okay. Fantastic.
Who you got, Nick?
I said Tyler Breeze.
All right, fine. All right, cool. We're going to go to the tag team titles now as New Day takes on the Dudley Boys.
I think New Day. I think New Day. I think it's great that the Dudleys are getting involved. I'm really hoping they're working towards a TLC match with the Dudley Boys. Hopefully they got one last big TLC match in them. I'm a huge Mark. If anybody's listening, I love that 90s, early 2000s stuff.
Do you see the new shirt that they got?
The New Day?
Yeah.
That thing's
amazing. Oh, the New Day shirt, yeah.
They're riding a unicorn.
Yeah.
And it's on a rainbow, and it's just so positive.
I love that the New Day, and I love that Xavier Woods is that cheerleader on the sideline, mm-hmm. that when I'm watching, I'm like, dude, just shut up. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, he's doing a great job at what he's doing then. Because he's making me at home be like, oh my gosh, this guy needs to shut up.
You know, there might not be any three guys on the roster hotter than the New Day right now. They have to retain at this point.
Don't you just love, I mean, did you watch, I don't know what they did this past week, but it was like 2 weeks ago they were facing like Rusev or something, and Xavier Woods is on the outside, and he played Rusev's theme music on the trombone. I was just like, that is the most awesome thing that I've ever heard.
Yeah, I think New Day as well, just because, you know, TLC is not too far away at this point. So I think, because, for example, at Madison Square Garden, they had this huge match, and, you know, they set up the 3D, and then they got in for the disqualification, so they retained the belts, and then Woods went through the table. They're always popping the table, this and that. I think this is on, because I know now they're starting to break up TLC into a tables match, a ladders match, and a chairs match, so I think that turns into the tables match for the night, because, I really
just don't want to see a plain chairs match anymore.
Well,
I think you just didn't like it because Big Show's been a part of it for the past,
the
like,
Big Show
seasons.
Chair, though. That thing is so huge.
Yeah, but
that's a fucking
yeah, I say New Day for sure for Hell in a Cell.
Hey, Nick, who you got?
Oh, yeah, I got New Day.
All right, moving on. We actually, before we preview the two Hell in a Cell matches, we're actually going to go to the WWE World Heavyweight title match as Seth Rollins defends against Kane. Stipulation is, if Kane does not win the belt, then corporate Kane is fired.
I have no idea where to go with that. I think it's obvious to say Seth Rollins, but for some stupid reason, I've always had this weird believing that WWE likes to give guys a proper farewell and maybe giving them, you know, maybe give Kane like the belt for like one last month. But now when I think about that and I say it out loud, it sounds really dumb because Kane has absolutely no momentum. It makes no sense to take it off Seth Rollins because Seth Rollins is the hottest heel that they've seen in the past couple of years, in my opinion. He's great in the ring. He's great with the mic. And it'd be a great way to figure out how to get rid of corporate Kane, I guess, if that's what they're trying to do. So I think Seth Rollins walks out with the championship.
Goodbye, corporate Kane. We hardly knew you.
Yeah, I got to say Seth Rollins. And the reason I say Seth Rollins is the fact that just this past month that they had Nikki Bella break AJ Lee's world her record essentially for the longest diva reign. I was thinking about it a few weeks afterwards was, you know, CM Punk's reign was pretty long as well, and obviously he's not coming back to the company anytime soon.
It was like,
and,
what, 430 some days, right?
Yeah, it's to that point, and right now Seth Rollins has a great gimmick going on. He's, you know, has, you know, anytime he retains the belt, it's almost like it's very weaselly. It's perfect for him. So at this point, I just don't think he drops that belt. And I honestly, the only person I see him dropping the belt to is CM Punk, and that's not going to happen.
CM Punk, really?
No, that's the thing, is that like the only way that Rollins won't break CM Punk's streak is if they get CM Punk back and then he challenges for the belt and then he retains his record.
You know what would have been really cool, though? What if this match was actually in the Hell in a Cell and, like, Taker wasn't wrestling, right? Kane goes for the tombstone and all of a sudden fucking lights come out and shit like that. And it's The Undertaker. He comes off and he rips off the door just like Kane did when Undertaker had his match against Shawn Michaels. That would be awesome. But
you just wrote that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the Hell in a Cell matches since we're on the topic. It's Roman Reigns taking on Bray Wyatt. Supposedly this is being booked as the last time these two guys are going to go head-to-head, one-on-one for quite some time.
Thank goodness.
Really?
I just
The one thing that I don't like with WWE's product sometimes, and it goes with any national product because it's sort of overexposed because there's just so much time on TV and the pay-per-views and blah, 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 is that I feel like you see the same guys wrestle each other every single night. Like, I feel like I feel it hasn't been this way, but I feel like because you see it so often, Bray and Roman Reigns, I feel like I've been feuding for like 2 years.
Well,
because,
they have been.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad that this is billed as their last matchup. Obviously, two really talented guys. Roman Reigns gets a lot of hate, but I think he's really, really good, and I think his future is really promising. Obviously, I'm a huge Bray Wyatt mark. I love the character to death. As far as a prediction, I mean, Roman Reigns gets the payoff, I guess. I don't really know. I mean, but at the same time, there's nothing more hot right now than the Wyatt family because they just keep adding members, and it looks like it's a big faction that's going to take over the biz. It's a toss-up. I have no idea. I'm not even going to make a prediction.
Who you got, Alex?
I'm going to say Reigns just because it's a payoff match. They're not going to be going one-on-one anymore after this. So and especially the build-up that the Wyatt family can't get involved in the Hell in a Cell because they're locked out. So I think they're essentially telegraphing that Roman Reigns is going to win.
Who won last month?
Between these two?
Yeah.
I didn't watch one.
I think that was the tag where Jericho came back and the Wyatts went over.
Oh, yeah, then Roman Reigns wins. Yeah.
I was about to try to Bray Wyatt. I think if you're looking at your top two faces leaving, you really need to create a new face. And like, I hate to say it, like if Wyatt can get some momentum right now as a top tier heel, I could actually see him and Rollins towards the end of the year. It could be really interesting, especially if what we think is going to happen during Taker Lesnar, which is the next match is going to happen. So guys, this is probably going to be the last time we're going to see Taker and Lesnar. And it's going to be inside of a Hell in a Cell. This is a match that should have been possibly a WrestleMania main event. Gets sped up to the month of October. That means it's probably...
What some consider a throwaway pay-per-view.
Well, it could be considered a throwaway pay-per-view, but at the same time, though, it's really telegraphing these two characters are going to go in totally different directions heading to WrestleMania. So I got to ask you, Alex, as a wrestler, who would you have in this fight?
I'm going to say the exact same thing I just said with Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt. It's a payoff match. It's the last time they're going to go toe-to-toe, so I say Undertaker. Because I think that's been the entire point of the go-to-hell tour, is to make Brock Lesnar look so unstoppable that once you get Undertaker, he just stops the momentum to screeching halt, and he gets his revenge, essentially, and gets a win that's not undisputed, like the low blow after the tap-out.
I think it's really tough. I think this is a really tough match to predict. I think they've been teetering towards Undertaker, kind of taking that villain role, but at the same time, you know, obviously it has a really big fight feel, which is kind of cool. It's kind of nice to see that actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch Raw Monday, so I don't really know how the storyline progressed. But
Taker came out, cut a promo. Lesnar came out; they had to stare down, stuff like that.
Fantastic.
That's exactly it.
Fantastic. Well, I think you know like I said, it's a toss up. I think both guys have just as much to lose from a loss as they do, you know, from a win. I think you know Taker gets a loss here; it could make him look slightly weak heading into what he probably won't be seen again until WrestleMania. I mean, Lesnar will probably come back for what, Survivor Series, maybe SummerSlam, whatever comes next. I don't even
SummerSlam?
Know. I have no idea what's going on right now. I can't.
SummerSlam is such a hot event. They're having it twice this year.
I've literally worked overnights for the past 2 weeks. Get off my freaking back. I'm tired. I'm sleepy. Survivor Series is what I wanted to say. I'm just gonna predict right now. I'm saying Lesnar. Fuck Taker.
I got to go with Lesnar. You put a lot of time and effort into this guy. Yeah, you put in a lot of time and effort for Taker, but Taker's always been about giving back, especially to a guy like Lesnar. It's going to be interesting to see where, as we alluded to, where both of these guys are going.
I'm going to ask you that. Yeah. Where do you think Lesnar and Taker go from here?
If I had to do any type of prediction, I would say Lesnar wins the Rumble, headlines WrestleMania against Bray Wyatt, who's a heavyweight champion at that point in time. Taker takes on John Cena.
I like that.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
And that's the thing, too. I think the reason for me that Undertaker wins the Hell in a Cell is because that way, like you're saying, that you don't want him to lose and make him look weak building up into his next appearance at WrestleMania. But if he wins and has a hellacious match where he wins against Brock Lesnar, he disappears. He comes back to hype WrestleMania. Everyone's like, oh, shit, he just destroyed Brock Lesnar last time we saw him. Who's his next victim? Whereas Lesnar, he can lose. And then he can come back even more pissed.
I want to see Cena and Taker so bad. How has that not been a thing since what they might have had a feud like when Cena's first couple months in the biz?
Three or four.
How have they not faced off?
Oh, 2-0-3. Sorry.
Since then,
with the ambience that surrounds Taker and Cena's obviously claim to fame as one of the best of all time. Like, how has that not happened?
I think they just always had different stuff going on. Perfect example, the whole thing with Triple H is that he wants to do something with Sting. He wants to do something with Seth Rollins. He wants to do something with The Rock at WrestleMania. He can only have one opponent. So it's just kind of like a bunch of ideas, but you just have to choose what the best one is for that time.
Well,
so,
you also got to look at it. Both guys were anchors of the whole Raw, SmackDown brand split. And, business was just rolling at the time. Sorry.
Gross.
Yeah, I know. It was really bad. But, guys, we have to keep on rolling with this podcast. We got a great interview coming up next.
We do have a great interview. George Shire is joining us. We're talking about the Minnesota Hall of Fame. And we're also talking about his newest book, Minnesota's Golden Age of Wrestling, from Vern Gagne to the Road Warriors. Great interview. George is a wrestling historian. He's been an author of multiple books. He will tell you coming up here, he actually has been on hundreds of podcasts and really just has a lot of knowledge about the business. And we're really looking forward to talking to him and getting some of that knowledge out of him.
This is Stacey Shadows.
We've said it numerous times that Stacey Shadows is one bad bitch.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk, the best indie wrestling podcast right now known to man.
We'll be right back.
This is the Monster of the Midwest, Sadus. There's a couple of things I really, really like. I like to hurt people, and I like grapple talk. So I'm going to keep listening.
It's not about the shoes. It's about knowing where you're going. Not forgetting where you started. It's about having the courage to fail. Not breaking when you're broken. Taking everything you've been given and making something better. It's about work before glory. And what's inside of you is doing what they say you can't. It's not about the shoes. It's about what you do in them. It's about being who you were born to be.
Hi, this is Corey from Independent Wrestling Apparel. Are you an independent wrestler trying to get t-shirts made or hosted online for sales? Visit us at independentwrestlingapparel.com or email us at indiewrestlingapparel@gmail.com and find out how you can get sponsored today. Are you a fan looking to get a shirt from your favorite independent wrestler? Visit our website at www.independentwrestlingapparel.com today and purchase your shirt of your favorite independent wrestler.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media. Create your legacy.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
For some reason, they let these stupid fans build weapons out of Legos to be used in this match.
Check out your Facebook or Twitter, and check out the Grapple Talk.
This was the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
This week in the Spotlight and Squared Circle, we are sitting down with our first author on the podcast. We're sitting down with George Shire, who will be in Robbinsdale, Minnesota at the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame. He's going to be talking about his book that he just wrote, the third book. It's Minnesota's Golden Age of Wrestling. And George, thank you for joining us this week.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Always love talking old wrestling.
You know, talking about wrestling really quick, how long have you been involved in wrestling? And, you know, when did you make the transition to actually start writing about wrestling?
Well, I actually started writing about wrestling about 1969 or 70 when I was still a teenager. I started writing for some of the wrestling magazines that were on the newsstand at that time. And that kind of led the way, getting to know the wrestlers and got to travel around and go to different territories back in the old territory days. And so the rest is history.
I find it really interesting because I'm a broadcast major, so journalism's kind of my thing, and writing about wrestling would always be a dream of mine. So how did you get started in actually, you know, being able to write for magazines and really working your way into the position that you have right now?
Well, you know, back in the territory days, if you lived that era, and you know, wrestling was always presented as a real sport, and the guys just would go out of their way to make sure that you believed what they were doing was real, even if you haven't the slightest doubt. And it was hard to kind of get behind the scenes, but my story was kind of different. I started going to the wrestling matches as a kid, and for whatever reason, I would buy the program that they were selling, and then I started buying 5 or 10 or 15 copies of the programs, and I started sending them out to different people in different cities. So I'd send a program to St. Louis to a friend, and he'd send me the St. Louis program. I'd do the same for other cities around the country. And I did that for several years. And one time, Marty O'Neill, who was our TV announcer for All-Star Wrestling, he used to always say, "Hey, young man, how you doing?" when he'd come to the matches. He'd see me sitting there. And one time, I had just turned 17. And Marty said, "I got to ask you a question." He says, "How come you always buy so many programs?" And I told him why I did it. And he said, "Wow, I didn't think anybody would do anything like that. I didn't think anything like that existed." And so he asked me if I wanted to start riding around with him during the summer to some of the area spot shows. And for fans that don't know what a spot show was, it was usually a smaller town card, maybe three or four matches where some of the guys would go to, and they'd bring, you know, the stars to a small town that they got to see on TV. And a lot of the fans in those smaller cities didn't get a chance to go to the big cities to see the big auditorium shows. So I got to be honest, I was totally like in awe when Marty O'Neill says, "Would you like to ride with me?" And I started riding with him around the one summer, and we went to small towns in Minnesota and a couple in Wisconsin. And, you know, he started talking to me, and every once in a while he'd say, "Well, don't repeat what I told you," or "Don't say anything about that," or "You never heard that from me," that type of stuff. And so I kind of got into the loop, and strangely enough, the wrestlers started knowing me. Red Bastine was one of them, and he was a local Minnesota wrestler. And Red Bastine, he was the very first wrestler that allowed me to come into the dressing room, the locker room. And when I came in, he just said to the other fellows in the room, the other wrestlers, he says, "Hey, he's okay, guys." And that's kind of how it started. Then I hooked up and I met Norman Keitzer, who was a publisher at the time of a magazine called The Wrestling News. And Norman eventually did all of the wrestling programs for various territories, including our own AWA. And he did the national publication Wrestling Review and Wrestling Monthly for a long time, and I started writing for him. So that's kind of how it worked.
So how eye-opening was that experience? You're on the road that whole summer, and the whole industry just opens up to you, and you kind of get like an idea of what the trade secrets were. Was that like your weird come to Jesus moment where you decide, well, wow, pro wrestling's a lot more interesting than I thought it was?
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny part of it is, guys, you know, when I was a young kid in school, back in that era, it's not like it is today. You know, the fans today, they can watch WWE, and it's just an open thing, and everybody talks about it, and everybody can be a fan or like it or whatever. But back in the kayfabe era, that was a time when if you were a wrestling fan, a lot of times you didn't talk to people about it that you knew didn't like wrestling. Or, you know, I had kids in school that would say, "You watch that fake stuff," or you know it's all fake, don't you?" and stuff like that. And what you learned quickly is that for those that, you know, I don't know if you ever heard the quote from wrestler Nick Kozak. He was an old wrestler from the Southwest area in Texas. Nick Kozak said one time, he says, "For those who don't believe, no explanation will do. For those who don't believe, or for those who do believe, no explanation is necessary." And I think that's kind of the philosophy I took. And so when I was in school and I had friends, I knew who I could let know I watched wrestling or went to wrestling. And for those that I didn't talk to about it, I knew they wouldn't understand. And so getting into the loop, as you asked the question, I think it just sort of happened. And, you know, I don't remember at the time that I was really like in that, oh my gosh moment. But a lot of that has happened through the decades in hindsight, when you realize that I've always felt I was very fortunate to grow up during the territory days, because I had the opportunity after I got my driver's license to drive to Indianapolis and drive to St. Louis and drive to Kansas City and Omaha and fly to Boston and go to Tampa and Miami and Houston and Dallas and Oklahoma. I mean, you name it. I did all this traveling to all these other territories, and it was just, that was the eye-opening thing for me, where it became more of a life rather than a hobby. And it's something to this very day where there is not one day that goes by that I'm not doing some sort of wrestling research on title histories or old territory results or wrestler career results, helping other people. I've helped many people with books. I just love doing that stuff. It is absolutely what I wake up for every day for. And I feel blessed, honestly, I do. It's a hobby I found that I got addicted to, and it's basically been a lifesaver at times.
Talking to pro wrestling historian George Shire, also an author. And George, before we actually get to talking about the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame, let's kind of talk about what you are sort of going to be presenting there. Let's talk about your newest book, Minnesota's Golden Age of Wrestling, from Vern Gagne to the Road Warriors. Tell me a little bit about what this book's really all about. I mean, what's the nuts and bolts, I guess? What's a good preview for people that want to maybe pick it up?
Well, I think the story behind the book for me, and the reason I wrote it, I'm sure you guys are aware that over the last decade, 15 years or so, there have been a lot of wrestling books that have come down the pike. And I can tell you, not only by fans and writers and journalists, and a lot of them by the wrestlers themselves, many, many of the books are really good. But there's also a great many of them that over the decade I've picked up and I go, oh my God, I can't believe that this they got this information wrong, or that they put this picture captioned wrong, or they didn't get this history straight. And the idea started formatting in my head that, you know, maybe I should do this. Well, truth be told, about a decade ago, I was complaining about a book that I had bought, and it was a particular wrestling book by a person that I actually knew very well, and I was disappointed that he had not done his research and put things in the book that were factual, and I was complaining about it, and my daughter said to me, Dad, instead of complaining about it, why don't you do your own book? Well, I'm going to tell you guys, too, you know, writing stories for magazines, and I did that for a long, long time, magazines and programs and things like that, that's really not that hard of a thing to do a short article or a short story for a magazine. But when you sit down and say, I'm going to do a book, you know, it's a lot harder than it sounds, because there's a lot of things that need to be changed. There's a lot of editing. There's a lot of, I got to include this, and I, you know, the space requirements, and you name it. So it really became quite a challenge, but I was fortunate enough to have the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, agree to do the book. It's the Minnesota Historical Society Press with the Minnesota History Center. And they agreed that it, you know, they wanted to do a history of Minnesota wrestling. Well, when I cover Minnesota wrestling, it's really covering the AWA, because the AWA was originated out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, but it covered all the various cities that the AWA promoted in. So I can tell the Minnesota history, and it basically tells the whole story. And I had originally wanted the name of my book, and only real old-school fans would appreciate this title, and that's what I figured would be the lure to the book. The title I wanted was Four Lights and a Ring. And the reasoning for that was, back in the old school days, when you went to a wrestling card at a local auditorium, there were three or four lights hanging above the ring, which I referred to as the wrestler's stage to do their work on, but the rest of the auditorium was dark. It wasn't like today's wrestling, where if you watch WWE or go to one of their events, you know that there's loud music playing, every wrestler has entrance music, and the pyrotechnics are going off, and, you know, it's just a very colorful and very bright production, a very different product. And so I wanted it to be Four Lights and a Ring to represent that era. Well, when we got to the publishing point, the History Center told me that they wanted Minnesota in the title, because them being a Minnesota publisher and a history museum, they thought that that would be a good seller. I didn't really agree with them at first, but in hindsight, I sure do, because it does sell. And when you have Vern Gagne's name on it, it definitely sells. So they were right, and I was wrong. So, but that's how the title came about.
Well, that's a great story, George. So I got to ask, too, from just starting with writing with the wrestling magazine, did you really see yourself, you know, not only writing one book, but three books on Minnesota history and becoming a wrestling historian? Or is that just something that just kind of happened, that you didn't see that further down the path?
Well, I don't think when I was 17, 18, 19, in my 20s, even in my 30s, that I thought of such a thing. I was doing occasional columns and things for Wrestling Review or Wrestling Monthly or the Wrestling News. It was something I enjoyed because I loved wrestling. And, you know, as I said earlier, wrestling became kind of a hobby because it was always, for me, a personal stress reliever. I was in banking. That was my profession.
Oh, that's very stressful.
And I spent 35 years in the banking world before I retired. And, you know, I raised a family with my beautiful wife, and through, like anybody else, and you know, you have those days when you just want to scream. And I was always able to just go into my wrestling room in my home, close the door for a half hour, and, you know, go through some programs or dig out some results and come out later, and the world's back in sync. And that's always been the way it was. So I don't think I ever planned on a book, but it is, you know, sometimes things just fall into place. I know you mentioned that you were a journalism major. Well, I had originally went to Brown Institute in St. Paul to be a radio broadcaster. That didn't pan out in the sense that it wasn't going to feed my family when I was working for a radio station on some small night overnight and get fired because they changed the format.
Trust me, we know that completely.
Yep. Well, and that's exactly what it was. And I, you know, we had a, at the time we had a new baby and a new home, and we were both working, and I just couldn't. My wife had the better job at the time, and so it was one of those things where radio wasn't an option.
Yep.
And I had also went to college for journalism. So I wanted to write, but I never thought of writing wrestling per se. But it all works out. And then through the years, now for the last 20 years, you guys could check, anybody can check out there. I think I have over 300-400 podcasts, wrestling podcasts that are on the internet that I've done not only with Wade Keller, but I've done them with a friend of mine named Dan Frataloni, who did Professor Wrestling, is what he called the podcast. And then I've also done several of them with my friend up in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, Glenn Broggett. We do a wrestling, we call it Wrestling Memories, and it's a radio podcast. So it's kind of ironic in a way that I never went into radio, but I've done a lot of radio work. And then I had the opportunity to work with Eddie Sharkey, who was a great pro wrestler in the 60s and early 70s. He was also one of the great trainers of wrestlers like the Road Warriors and Nikita Koloff and several others, Jesse Ventura. And I got a chance to work with Eddie Sharkey with his Pro Wrestling America promotion. And I got to do television and interviews and all that. So, you know, it all kind of just falls into place. But I don't think I ever sat back and said, yeah, that's what I want to do. But it was fun when I could, and now I do it all the time.
Well, we're definitely really happy to have you here on Grapple Talk. And I got to ask you, you know, we kind of been talking about the past a little bit, the history, but obviously with all the knowledge that you bring to the table, I got to ask you, you know, what do you think about the current state of wrestling? I mean, when you go out and you watch shows, I mean, how do you think things are really going here, especially on the independent scene?
Well, you know, I think over the last several years, my perception and my opinion has changed and probably mellowed. I will be honest with you that if I go back 30 years to 1984, 85, when the territorial system started breaking down and Vince McMahon was raiding the territories to get talent to go on the national scene as he did, I think I was like a lot of the old wrestlers and promoters at the time. I didn't want to see my wrestling go away the way I remembered it. I think I was bitter for a while that, you know, I was mad at Vince McMahon for doing what he did, the way he did it. We could talk about it being unscrupulous, but in the end of the line, I give the man complete credit for being a genius. You know, you go back 30 years, he was 33, 34 years old. He had a vision that the old school promoters, who were all in their late 50s and 60s and some even older than that, didn't see as an option or an opportunity. And if some of them did see it, they didn't have a wherewithal to put it into place. So Vince McMahon took it to the next level. And as the years have went on, I don't necessarily follow the current product, but I do still appreciate every single wrestler that laces up a pair of boots and puts a pair of trunks on and do what they do, because it's not an easy job. And, you know, Vince McMahon has changed it for a new generation, and I had my time, kids today are having theirs.
So I got to ask you a quick question. Now we see, like I know up in Minneapolis this weekend, they're actually going to have Chikara up there. It's definitely a different type of wrestling product. It's more humor-based, a little bit more Lucha Libre. Do you actually see where you have movies have different genres and stuff like that? You think pro wrestling itself on the indie scene can actually facilitate more genres where you can see like an old school wrestling promotion? You can see more of a comedy high spot type of promotion. Do you think that's feasible, or you think that's almost kind of like, it might be a little too much?
Well, you know, there's a couple of the independent promotions that I do still follow, and I've done wrestling commentary and things for Steel Domain Wrestling that is out of Minnesota here.
A really good company.
But, you know, I got to tell you, the independent scene, I kind of feel sad for it, because most of the boys that are working on the card, they really have nowhere to go to get the fundamental training for wrestling like the boys of the past did in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. They have no territories to go to gain the experience from other wrestlers and the styles of different territories. And so they're wrestling, you know, once a week or whatever they're doing. And a lot of them are, you know, in their first, second, third, fourth match. And the attitudes are different. They want to make sure that they get their move in or get their high spot in, or, you know, they don't want to lose because their buddies are in the front row and they don't want to lose. And that isn't the way wrestling was run back in the territory days. You know, I think you guys may be aware that when Vern Gagne came on to the wrestling scene in the early 50s, he made his debut on May 3rd of 1949. But when Vern transitioned from amateur wrestling to pro wrestling, that was in the advent of the television era. Television was in its infancy in the early 50s. And wrestling was a very cheap product for television stations around the country to put on because it didn't cost them anything. And all they had to do was go around and sell advertising and let guys like Vern Gagne and Killer Kowalski and Gorgeous George and Buddy Rogers and the rest of them bring the fans into watching their show. And so television was that era. But Vern Gagne, to go back to him, through the years, he was one of the guys that really wanted to always emphasize amateur wrestling first and knowing the fundamentals of wrestling before you got into the pro wrestling side of it. And you then started getting the color to your style and you know, bleaching your hair or wearing a robe or bragging and you know, whatever the gimmick was. But Vern Gagne trained, Greg Gagne and I were trying to come up with a list here just a few months back, and we hit about 150 guys that Vern actually brought into the business. Some of those names that you could throw out, you know, like the three Anderson brothers, Lars, Gene, and Ole, and Baron Von Raschke, and Blackjack Mulligan, and Blackjack Lanza, and Larry the Axe Hennig. And the list just goes on and on and on. Ricky Steamboat, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I mean, there are just so many guys. Ric Flair, let's not forget the Nature Boy. And Vern Gagne trained all of these wrestlers. And, you know, in that era, they were able to get their training from Vern, work on early cards in the AWA, and then Vern could give a call to Eddie Graham down in Tampa or Fritz Von Erich in Texas or Bill Watts down in Oklahoma or even Vince McMahon Sr., Don Owen in Portland and Paul Bosch in Houston. He could give a call to anybody and say, you know, I got a young guy here. I'd like you to use them for a little bit and let him get some experience. And so he'd send them over there. And then, you know, on the other side of the coin in that era, those same promoters would send a wrestler to Vern, and they'd send a big name, and they'd exchange talent. So it was a much nicer time in the business. But I do not see, I don't think I see it in my lifetime, wrestling ever going back to the way it once was. I think it would almost have to completely disappear. Absolutely, there's no such thing as pro wrestling or WWE or anything. And it might have to just go away for 5-10 years. And then maybe it could come back in a sort of the old school way, but not the way the fans are conditioned today, because fans today are conditioned more for the quickness. I think you guys, some of you, all of you maybe follow WWE and the current product and the indies. And a lot of the matches, a lot of the introductions and the interviews that they have are longer than their matches.
That's true. That's true.
They don't tell the story anymore like they were able to. They have writers that are doing scripts for the wrestlers. That was a very different thing, guys, because back in the old territory days and then when television was the main outlet, you know, they had, they'd have an hour, hour and a half TV show, and they'd have four or five matches on the TV show. They'd have a good wrestler, and we'll just use a Vern Gagne, for example, and Vern Gagne would wrestle a Kenny J on the card. And Kenny J was a jobber. He was the enhancement talent. And we all know that that was his job, to lose. And Vern was the guy that was being put over. So then they'd come out, and they'd have their two-minute interview with Marty O'Neill or Mean Gene Okerlund back in the day, or whatever territory you're in. If you were down in Florida, it was a Gordon Soley, you know, that did the interviews, and Boyd Pierce down in Texas, and wherever it was. But those guys then had their minute or two, unscripted. Just give them a town, give them an opponent, give them where they are in the storyline and the program they're in with the guy they're going to go against, and they ran with it for a two-minute interview, and they made the fans watching want to run to the auditorium to get their tickets to see them wrestle. If they were the bad guy, the fans wanted to go see the bad guy get his behind just handed to him. And if they were the good guy and they were loved, the fans went to see him do the kicking. So it worked. They used to have the great 2 out of 3 fall matches where the story would be told in that match so that by the third fall they could do the disqualification where the referee got knocked down and didn't see the foreign object coming in, and that was the reason for the rematch, folks. So now next week, a good guy can try to get revenge. You know, they always told the story. And I have to tell you a funny story about when I mentioned a referee there.
Okay.
I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said, we were talking about referees of the old days, and he said to me, I used to hate Marty Miller, and I don't know if you guys were familiar with AWA wrestling, but Marty Miller was one of our regular referees. And many times, Marty was the most inadequate referee you could have in the ring. He missed the tags. He missed the foreign object. He missed the interference of the tag team partner or the manager. And the guy I was talking to, the friend, he says, and I got so mad at that because he was so inept, I wanted to throw my shoe at the TV. And I just laughed at him, and I said, well, what you don't realize is that was Marty Miller's job. That's what he was supposed to do. And if he irritated you because he missed that, he was part of that show to get you to come back next time so that the Crusher could get revenge or whatever it was. And that was what was so unique about wrestling back in that era.
Well, it's definitely true. When you actually have a referee like that who actually does it on purpose, it's great, but we see a lot of referees who do it not on purpose, and it's terrible. But we need to talk about the Wrestling Hall of Fame up there in Robbinsdale. I got to ask you, how did that thing all come to fruition? You know, it's a great stopping ground for anyone who's a wrestling fan. How is everything going with it so far?
Well, yeah, first of all, let's stop right there, and let's give credit to Carol Castle. Mm-hmm. I know you guys know her. This is the brainchild of Carol's. She wanted to come up with a way to recognize Robbinsdale wrestling as well as Minnesota wrestling. Robbinsdale produced both Vern Gagne, Robbinsdale High School, and also Larry Hennig. Larry Hennig was trained by Vern Gagne for the pro ranks. And, you know, Larry had a villain career early. He was Larry Pretty Boy Hennig as a heel, and then he transformed in the 70s to a good guy and became Larry the Axe. And Carol came up with the idea that it would be nice to honor not only those two guys, but so many other wrestlers that were either Minnesota-born or just basically Minnesotans because they were here for so long, either in the AWA or the Minnesota Territory. And that's where her idea for the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame came into play. And a few months back, she had the induction ceremony, the first one ever, and she inducted Vern Gagne posthumously, of course, and Greg Gagne accepted on his behalf. And then she had Larry the Axe Hennig there, and those were the first two inductees. Now, this is a small venue. It's a small building. It's a small effort at this point. But like I said, I want to give credit to Carol because she has her heart in the right place. And I will tell you that Greg Gagne spoke with me after he attended the event, and he said, you know, Carol's got a lot on her shoulders trying to do this. I think she needs a lot of help with it, but her heart's in the right place. And so that's why I reached out to Carol, and I said, and that's what Greg told me. He says, I think she could maybe use your help. So I reached out to her in the effect that whatever I can do to help her get this museum, this Hall of Fame underway, I think it's a novel idea because Minnesota has always been known for its amateur wrestling and its pro wrestling, and I think if she keeps working at it, then the guys are behind her. Larry Hennig was impressed. But like I say, at this point, it's a very small operation. But as we know, every single thing starts small, and we can only hope for bigger things. So we got to give her credit. And then this Saturday, coming up on the 24th, she asked me if I wanted to come to the museum and bring some books along and talk old wrestling with some of the fans that are going to attend. And I always love talking wrestling. You guys have just figured that out. And so, yeah, that's what's going to happen, and we'll just see where it goes from there.
It'll be an exciting time, that's for sure. It's this Saturday, as you mentioned, at 11 a.m. for anybody interested. It's at the Robbinsdale Historical Society, obviously in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. So, George, thank you very much for talking with us about wrestling. It's been a great time. So hopefully
very
things,
educational.
Very educational, yes. Absolutely. And hopefully everything goes well on Saturday.
Well, I thank you guys very much for the opportunity. And I also then would throw in that plug for Minnesota's Golden Age of Wrestling. From Vern Gagne to the Road Warriors, you can go to Amazon.com and get a copy of it. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's a good, honest history with the first half of the book is a history of wrestling in Minnesota, which, again, I will tell you, covers the whole AWA. And then the second half of the book is bios and statistics and that sort of thing on some of what we call the mainstays of Minnesota, so guys like the Crusher and Hardboiled Haggerty and Mad Dog Vachon and so on, along with pictures and different things all from my personal files. But go to Amazon. I think you'll enjoy the book.
You can get the book on Amazon.com, like George mentioned. You can also maybe even get a book in person this Saturday at the Robbinsdale Historical Society. George Shire on Grapple Talk. We'll be right back with more Grapple Talk right after this.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Darren Corbin. I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestlers Brewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Ruden, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast every Tuesday.
On iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, PencilPodcast.com.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net. Gerwig.net, pro wrestling since 1997.
Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says...
Stop watching your neighbors get undressed. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is...
Download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. It's not rocket science.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Guys, we went to school today. We sat down with the wrestling encyclopedia, George Shire, and I feel my head is about to explode with the amount of knowledge he dropped on it.
Yeah, we really...
It's a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, we talked to him after we got off the podcast. I mean, the guy just, like he's told us, he could talk wrestling for days on end, and hopefully we can have him back sometime to talk more history, because... You know, sometimes it's really nice, you know, we talked about the Hell in a Cell earlier, but sometimes it's nice to look back at, you know, 30 years ago and really realize how far the business has come.
Oh, definitely. It's almost one of those things where we're sitting there, we're writing notes for questions next time. Hopefully we can have him during podcast sweeps, which I don't even know.
Is that a thing?
It might be. Let's say it is now. Let's have, like, this whole sweeps era.
Let's just make one up.
Yeah.
Sweep starts in TV in November, and believe me, I'm not looking forward to it. I can't take a day off.
Maybe,
I tried.
Maybe, like, podcasts. I know you told me about that, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, I told you about that, because I want to take off for that concert, and they're like, nope.
Nope, can't do that.
I'm probably about to get fired since I'm talking about that on the podcast, but
nope,
whatever.
Nope, can't do that.
Be kind, rewind. Tape study.
All right, we're going to go to Pro Wrestling NOAH. They had their Great Voyage 2015 about a month ago, actually. The main event was Segura taking on the GHC Heavyweight Champion, Minoru Suzuki. The storyline going in this match is Suzuki and the Suzuki Gun have invaded Pro Wrestling NOAH. They were actually a huge stable there in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And the big thing is, if no one from NOAH can win back any of the GHC titles, Noah would dissolve. Now, that's actually a pretty cool storyline because it's actually helped the business, especially in Noah, pop. This is actually a really fun match to watch. A lot of striking. This is hard-hitting, fuck-you-in-the-face type of wrestling. That's
fuck
right.
You in the face.
Fuck you in the face,
you know what's
type
weird?
Of wrestling.
I listened poetic. To some of our older podcasts when we had the bleep, and it was kind of funny. It was hilarious. And now we're just like, whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of those things where
AC Riley's like, I don't like having to go through this shit. Like, you don't listen to him anyways.
You
guys. Yeah, I don't
you
have the time.
Do
no, it's different listening to the podcast and listening to it under a microscope, because that's what I had to do when I bleeped out every time we said
you know, you
fuck.
Use a microscope to look at stuff.
Fuck you in the face.
Wow.
All right. Well, guys, that was episode 93. We'll be back next week with 94. We don't know who our guest is.
We don't. We have no idea yet. AC Riley, closing comments.
It will be Halloween week, so we'll hopefully talk to somebody that represents Halloween.
That likes Halloween.
Well, we're going to talk to Damien 666 of Lucha Libre.
Ooh. Sure, why not?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we could do that.
Kid Riot would love that.
We'll get, yeah.
Card subject to change, though.
Kid Riot will definitely listen to that one. All right, cool, guys. Well, great episode as always. Thanks for joining us this week on Grapple Talk. Have a splendid weekend, everybody. Make sure to check out the wrestling, Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame if you have the opportunity to. Otherwise, as always, support indie wrestling and have a wonderful week. I don't know. I don't even know how to end this. What do you guys, want to say something? I don't want to shut everything down with
I just say goodbye.
All right, stay classy.
Thank you for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
All
right, I'll start things
squeaky.
Sounds like Lilar. Lilar and Stitch. Lilar Ohana.
Jesus.
Ohana means family. You don't even know what I'm talking about, Jesse?
I've never seen this movie.
Oh.
With Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
Wait, I would say the traditional one.
something like that. I don't know.
Oh, what was that?
I don't know.
Beatboxing by A.C. Riley, not available in stores
gosh.
For good reason.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.